The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So again, my name is May. It's lovely to be back with you. I see some faces from people who have been here the whole time for several sessions now, some new faces. Totally fine if this is your first session with us. This is the fourth class in a 5-week series, and today is on mindfulness of thinking. So as with our last weeks, our previous weeks, we'll start with a little review of what we did last week. So last week was mindfulness of emotions. Yeah, mindfulness of emotions. So we talked about a few different things, one of which was being with emotions in a really simple way, learning to... I shared the Buddha's analogy of the second arrow. Can we be with our emotions without shooting ourselves with any additional arrows? So can we just be angry without then being embarrassed that we're angry, or judgmental of ourselves that we're angry, or rejecting our anger? Just start with let's just stick with one arrow. We don't have to shoot 5 arrows. So keeping it really simple, simple in our relationship to the emotion. And then we also talked about raft, which is supportive of not shooting second arrows and third arrows. Anybody remember what the R stands for?
Recognize.
Recognize, exactly. So just recognizing the emotion, name it to tame it. What was the A?
Allow.
Yeah, exactly. So I usually use the word allow. Some teachers use the word accept. This basically meeting whatever is present without resistance or rejection or aversion. And if aversion shows up, can we allow that? That's then we're not rejecting the rejection. What was the F?
Feel.
Yes, feeling it in the body. And we'll talk about that more today. Feeling it in the body. Body is always present. And T, what was the T? Yeah, tenderness. Yeah, bringing some compassion to it, bringing some self-compassion. Great. So excellent tool for working with emotions. Were there any, as you practiced with emotions this week, were there any questions that came up for you, or just maybe even just things you noticed that you'd like to share? And if you have anything, just come grab the mic and share your name when you speak up.
Daniel, my question is, the first class you mentioned that you like to read Dharma before you practice, and I like that idea of kind of like holding space for your practice, and was wondering, what is Dharma, and what are some examples of that?
Yeah, so Dharma is a word that's thrown around a lot in this scene, and it's a really good question because it can actually refer to a few different things. So one of maybe the most practical definitions of Dharma is it refers to the teachings of this, the Buddhist lineage. So Dharma is what you find in the Buddha's suttas, the early Buddhist teachings. It's what you hear if you go to a Dharma talk. It's what you read if you read a Dharma book. It's all these teachings. Another definition of Dharma, which is aligned with that, is the truth. So the Dharma is an explication of the truth of things, the way things really are. Often our perceptions are misaligned with the way things really are, that we perceive things. We perceive threats and dangers and aggressions that aren't necessarily there. We invent a lot of suffering for ourselves that it's not aligned with the truth. So the Dharma, another definition is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe just a small aside. If you get into reading Buddhist literature, sometimes you'll see Dharma with a small d, and that can refer to kind of the myriad things, all of the things. But typically, I wouldn't worry about that so much for the most part. If you see Dharma, it'll be the teachings. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks, Daniel. Sri.
So, you know, I understand that we can be with emotions without judging, but I don't want to be in the present moment. Like, I mean, pay attention to the present moment. I want to escape. Mm-hmm. There are times when I want to escape.
Yeah, yeah. So what's happening when you want to escape?
There is a lot of suffering, and I don't want to acknowledge that I'm suffering.
Yeah.
I want to kind of escape into something like imagination or...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm really glad that you're naming that, and because a lot of people experience that. Being in the present moment with whatever emotion might be there, whatever physical sensation might be there, is sometimes pretty intolerable. Like it can be really uncomfortable. You know, some emotions are like excruciating. So of course you don't want to have to be there. It's like, why would I be present with this? This is miserable. I want to, you know, I can want to escape. So it's a really understandable sentiment.
So what do we do?
Yeah, right. So what then? So part of what we're training in is learning how to inhabit our experience, even when it's uncomfortable. So it's okay that you don't want to be here. The first step is seeing that. So what's great is you're aware of that. You're aware of like, oh, you know, I don't want to be with this right now. So that's a really important first step. But the direction we're heading is learning to little by little learn to inhabit that moment that is intolerable.
Mm.
And what we find over time is that we can be with really unpleasant experience without aversion, without rejection. And part of the way we learn to do that is our wisdom grows, and we begin to see that no matter how intolerable this state is, it's not going to last. All emotions pass. Even the most excruciating one ends eventually. So we begin to trust the impermanent nature of the emotion. We begin to find that it's possible to rest in unpleasant experience without the second arrow of aversion. So part of what you might notice when you have that I don't want to be here with this, is to notice the not wanting. That's that sort of, you know, pushing away, right? That rejecting of the experience. So it's like, okay, so now I'm seeing that maybe there's the baseline experience. So maybe it's depression. And that's, you know, very unpleasant. And then the second arrow of aversion to the depression. Okay, so there's not wanting here. And so just seeing that, seeing what's happening, and maybe even just training and just for, okay, I'm going to see if I can be with this for 2 minutes. Or if that feels like too much, I'm going to just set my timer. I'm just going to do raft for 60 seconds, and then I'll distract myself.
Mm.
So just little, you know, really titrating it. You don't have to overwhelm your system with it. So you're just recognizing the emotion, seeing the second arrow, just little bits at a time. And then resource. You know, you can turn your attention elsewhere. Little by little, and then you grow that over time. Okay, I can be with this a little longer now, a little longer.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Other questions? Yeah, Emily.
So when you're, I guess I'm wondering for some recommendation or what you do when you do read a Dharma. So I had been doing that and then I stopped just for this week for other reasons, but I'm going to start again. But I noticed that when I get into meditation, so then I like set an intention or whatever on my Insight app, and I refer to that, I look at it sometimes throughout the day, but my question is more like, are you supposed to meditate on the lesson that you're reading about in the Dharma talk? Because then I feel like that Well, so I instantly forget when I sit down and start meditating, like whatever it was that I read about, but, and that's probably a personal problem. But I guess I'm like, if I meditate on the thing that I just read about, then I'm not really focusing on my body or me meditating. So if I'm just wondering if you could speak a little bit to how do you balance those two things or what you're supposed to do with that Dharma talk and then meditate.
Yeah, really good question. So as a relatively new meditator, I would suggest do your little reading, and then I probably wouldn't try to meditate on what I just read, but rather I'd stick with the really simple meditation practice that's being offered here. So then you can really grow your foundational skills. Because what we're doing over these five weeks is really focusing on the essentials, like really growing that ability to, you know, be in the body, be with the breath, notice sensations, etc. The way that reading a little bit of Dharma from a Dharma book functions is it often just brings a little inspiration to the mind. Or it might just remind us why we're sitting. You know, this is why this feels valuable to me. Or like, oh yeah, this is what we're doing here. Or, you know, yeah, oh yeah, I want to be, you know, a kinder person. Or, it can bring up the inspiration a bit because there's so many streams of the mind that are so inclined to distraction in meditation that it can just help reorient us to, oh yeah, this is what I'm doing here. It may be that at later times in your practice, you're reading a Dharma book that has some really clear meditation instruction, and that you decide, okay, I want to, for a period of time, I want to follow the instructions in this book. And so I actually am going to make my meditations aligned with what the suggestions are in the reading. So that's also fine to do. For now, though, I just keep it simple. Stay with what we're doing here. Yeah. Yeah. Great. Thanks. Well, thank you for your questions. Let's go into the instruction for today. So today is, as noted, mindfulness of thinking. And a few of you were here for the talk this morning. Who is here for the talk? Great. Awesome. So for maybe the first third of the class, I'll go over some of the things that I shared this morning. And I found for myself, hearing these instructions about 1,000 times is useful. So don't despair if you're hearing some repeat material. And then we'll spend a little bit more time on the relationship between emotions and thoughts, feeling thoughts in the body, etc. Some additional teachings there. To date in our class, in terms of the way that we've practiced, we've practiced with the breath as the primary anchor. Breath is the home base. If a thought takes us away, we let go of the thought, come right back to the breath. Or at least that's the intention, right? Let go of the thought, come back to the breath. Because of that, because that's the instruction, it can seem like we're trying to get rid of our thoughts. Like, it's a bad meditation if I just think the whole time, and it's a good meditation if I've been able to get my thoughts to stop. So while there are benefits, many benefits to letting go of thoughts, releasing thoughts, and steadying and stabilizing the mind, thoughts are not the enemy. And so I really want to emphasize that today, that that thoughts are not the problem. And eradicating thoughts, that's not actually the goal of meditation. The goal of meditation, the goal of this whole Buddhist path is freedom from suffering, is a complete uprooting of the difficulties that we create for ourselves. And that's possible with this path. In order to be free of difficulty in our life, we still need to be able to think. It's hard to operate in this world without thinking. It's just that we need to develop a wise relationship to our thoughts. And currently, most of us don't have a very wise relationship to our thoughts. For most of us, thoughts really run the show. For most of us, we're hijacked by our thoughts. We're kind of like poltergeists, where we're just possessed by our thoughts. We're little puppets, and we do whatever our thoughts tell us to do. So what we're learning in this practice is how to reverse that role, where rather than us being bossed around by our thoughts, we're able to see our thoughts and have much more agency as to whether we act on the thought or we don't act on the thought, whether we believe the thought or we don't believe the thought, where we can really have much more choice with what thoughts we act on and what we don't. And so that's really the direction we're heading, like this is this wise relationship. And part of this, because of this tendency for meditators is so strong to abhor thinking, it can be helpful to remember that thoughts do really wonderful things for us. You know, it's possible to have thoughts of generosity, thoughts of kindness, thoughts about the practice. You know, everything that we're doing here in this class is possible because we can think, right? We can think and we can communicate. So it's a really useful tool. We just don't want our machines to get out of control. So we're learning how to use our machines wisely. We're learning how to use the mind wisely. So part of this, this skillful relationship to thinking, part of it is accepting, knowing that thoughts are part of the human experience. We can accept that this is something the mind does. Something I often say is that the mind produces thoughts the same way the mouth produces saliva. You know, this is just the function of the organ. We don't have to hate the mind for producing thoughts in the same way that we don't have to hate the mouth for producing saliva. It's just what it does. That's okay. And so as we learn to practice with thoughts, there's two ways we can approach them. One is letting go of thoughts, which is what we've been doing so far. And then the second option is investigating the thoughts. And that's what we'll do more of today. That's where we actually, rather than letting go of the thought, we actually turn and look at the thought itself and learn how to be mindful of it. So to start this investigation, what I'd like to point out is that even though the content of thoughts are often, you know, often the contents of our thoughts are about the past, they're often about the future, the thinking itself happens in the now. So a thought is actually a present moment phenomenon. And if we're not lost in the content about past or future, we can see it just as another arising in the present. And knowing this, that a thought is a present moment phenomenon, we can be mindful of it in exactly the same way we can be mindful of a sound or a body sensation or an emotion. It's just here and now, if we can see it clearly. So that's an important kind of foundation in knowing this. And what happens as we can begin to see thoughts more clearly in this way, we begin to see that, gosh, thoughts they're just words and pictures in the mind. You know, they're like these little holograms or energy wisps. Like there's nothing substantial here. They're really, really insubstantial. So as we begin to see this, when we're not so caught in them and we're like, wow, this is just this funny little word and picture, that's really running the show. As we can start to see that, it begins to lose its power over us. Thoughts can begin to lose their strength and their power when we see them for what they really are, just these little holograms in the mind. As part of losing their power over us, we begin to take them less personally. We begin to be less possessed by them. And there's so much freedom that becomes available when we're not run around by our thoughts, when we don't take them so personally, when we don't let them dictate who we are or whether we're worthy of love or all of these things. So being mindful of thoughts is different than being lost in thoughts. So when we're lost in thoughts, we don't know that we're thinking. We're just, you know, we're down the rabbit hole. We're goners, right? We're just totally in it. when we're mindful of thinking, we know that thoughts occur. Remember, mindfulness is knowing what's happening in the present moment, and we can know a breath or we can know a thought, just like that. So if I were to say, think of a rainbow unicorn, I imagine a picture of a rainbow unicorn could appear in your mind. And it's pretty obvious that's a thought, right? Maybe it's a little picture, maybe it's more like words, maybe it's a general sense. It's a thought. Typically, when we're thinking, we don't know it as a thought. We know it, we relate to it as reality, as the truth. But really, it's just a fabrication. You know, it's this little picture in the mind. So let's do a practice together to explore this a little more. So we'll do a sitting, we'll do a meditation. And in this, I'll invite you to picture like a blank screen in the mind, almost like a projector screen. And then from that vantage point, it's almost like, we'll perch on the edge of the mind and wait to see what arises. And I'll invite you to see if you can notice a thought arising on that screen. So we'll play with this a bit. So go ahead and find your meditation posture, a posture that's comfortable, that allows you to have some energy in the body while still being relaxed. And as always, it can be really helpful to take a few moments to land and to settle. So go ahead and connect with the breath and the body. Maybe taking a moment to relax, softening the face and the shoulders, the belly. And connecting with the breath where it's easy for you to feel it. We'll spend a few moments just quietly with the breath. And during this time, if a thought arises, we'll just let it go. So we're stabilizing the mind, we're steadying it, letting go of thoughts and returning to the breath. Just knowing and sensing the breath. Knowing and sensing the breath. Really simple, nothing extra. Now, having take in a few moments to stabilize the mind, to bring a little stillness or steadiness. We'll now practice mindfulness of thinking. And we'll do this by bringing this blank screen to the mind. So for some, it feels like the blank screen is located around the forehead or in front of the head. For others, it might be somewhere else. Just imagining this blank projector screen. It's as though we're sitting on the edge of the mind, imagining this screen. And what I'd like you to do is see if you can notice the first thought that arises on this screen after I finish this sentence. Maybe you were able to see a thought arise. Maybe you saw it come and go. Or maybe not. Fine either way. Go ahead and return the attention to your anchor, your home base, the breath. Settling again with the breathing. Just a couple breaths. And again, bringing this blank screen to the mind. And see if you can notice the next two thoughts that take place after I finish this sentence. Maybe it's words or pictures. Can you notice the thought without losing mindfulness and getting lost in the content of the thought? So we're distinguishing the process of thinking, noticing images or words from the content, the getting lost in the content. And again, coming back to the breath. And remembering as you do this, sometimes thoughts are a little sneaky, a little hard to see. It may be that there was a subtle thought, wow, there's no thoughts right now. That's a thought. Or I'm not very good at this. That's also a thought. Or I wonder when the next thought is going to come. Also a thought. feeling the breath. And again, opening up to this blank space or blank screen. And when I finish talking, I'll invite you to notice any thought that arises, maybe for the next minute or so. And as you do this, I'll offer some prompts for ways you might investigate the thoughts that you're noticing. So go ahead and see what arises now. So again, are the thoughts in words or pictures? How compelling are the thoughts? Is there a strong hook to them, like you're sucked in easily? Or are they kind of light, where they don't hook you in, a little easier to see them floating past? Is there a location or a place where the thoughts are arising spatially? Where do you sense that they're arising? At any point, if you get lost, you can always come back to the breath. You can always land with the breath for a few breath cycles and open up to thinking again. For some, a thought has an auditory element, and there's a tone of voice with the thought. See if that might be the case for you. As we come to the end of this meditation, you might notice if there were any self-referential thoughts about whether you were good at this or bad at this, any sort of judgment or report card you might be giving yourself. And just notice those as thoughts. Nothing you need to take personally. Just these evanescent wisps in the mind. This is a subtle meditation. This is not, thoughts are not obvious or easy to see typically. So if you found that this was difficult to see a thought, don't worry about it. This is something that becomes more and more available, more and more visible. The more we settle in our practice, the more that we've learned how to stabilize in our practice, to really be here and be present, the more we're able to see our thoughts. So I'm curious, what did you notice in this meditation? What are you, what's coming up for you around mindfulness of thinking? And if you have any questions, those are welcome too. Peace.
So my question is, I think during the meditation, I also had a little bit of...
Florence, would you hold a little closer?
Oh, okay. So during the meditation, I also had a little hard time to, I guess, concentrate, or there are times I'm more conscious about my posture, you know, am I sitting, or there's tightness in the body. So I think those are, I'm not sure, are those also thoughts or, there's this question. Thank you.
Yeah. So sometimes we might notice maybe you're doing your mindfulness of thinking practice and body sensation kind of stands out, like grabs your attention. That sensation can be known without thinking. So there can be a gurgling in the belly, a sharp sensation in the knee, the sensation of cold toes, a sound outside, and all of those can just be known on a very simple level, just like a moment of contact, we call that. However, there can also be that moment of contact and then a thought about it. Oh, my knee hurts. Or, oh, I wonder why my belly's gurgling, or, oh, I shouldn't have had that for lunch, or whatever it is. So it could be both, but you could check for yourself to see if there's a thought about it.
Thank you.
Finding this is like sometimes tricky because my thoughts, like maybe... They're more image based than phrases, so it's hard to distinguish them a lot of times. Mm-hmm. So, but I just wonder if anybody else has that same problem.
I think a lot in pictures.
Yeah,
images. Yeah, so that's quite common to have thoughts arise in images, and we can learn to just see it as an image, almost in the same ways that the eyes would see an image, but we know it as a thought. So a while ago, I was sitting on a retreat, and I was I noticed that I was daydreaming about going out to dinner when the retreat was over. And I was like, oh, okay. So it's like this one's, you know, this thought's come up a few times now. Like what's going on here? Rather than just letting go of the thought. And so I, just kind of took a look, you know, like, okay, kind of like a freeze frame rather than just letting go of the thought. Let's just, you know, press the pause button on the video here and see what this looks like. And I could see, like, oh, here's the window. I could see the exact restaurant I was at and could see the windows and the little table and the food on the table. And so I just got to see it as a picture without getting lost in thinking about that. You know, just seeing, really simple seeing. And oh, this is really pleasant. Oh, this is a really pleasant image. And, oh, there's some crave, because this is so pleasant, there's some craving for it. Like, I'm grabbing a hold of this thought, and I want to make it happen in reality. Because I think reality is going to match the thought, right? But on a very simple level, it's just, okay, just seeing. It's just seeing. And there's some pleasantness. And, oh, I'm noticing, there's kind of the attitude of wanting with that. The wanting feels like this in the body right now. So this is just an example of how you might be with an image in the mind.
So as you explore that, is that a thought of craving in the end?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So there was craving along with that thought. And that craving, can have additional thoughts that could come out of that. Oh, I really want to do that. When could I put that on the calendar? Gosh, I think the Friday after retreat is open. You know, so it could have, that craving could have additional thinking. Or I could just on a very simple level recognize that there's that force of craving in the body, in the mind, that kind of subtle lean into the future, you know, that grabbing hold, and then sense that in the body. Yeah.
Thanks. Mm-hmm.
I want to appreciate the words you use, because we are puppets of our thoughts. That was kind of nice.
Yeah.
Relate to. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. It can really feel like we're puppets of our thoughts sometimes, the way that we're driven around by them. And it's such a reversal to be able to see that we don't need to do that. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Saurabh here. So I think the predominant thought was why the thoughts are not arising when I'm watching them. And maybe you mentioned that's a thought. So I think, and when I'm not watching, then a lot of thoughts are coming. And then I'm like in that loop of thinking, and then I have to come back. Oh, I was in that loop. But my question is, so when I'm watching, I'm like watching the thought to come up. So that is something that I generated that thought myself. So maybe like the thoughts that are getting generated and I'm trying to watch them. So are there like two things that are happening? Like what's happening? So that's like, I don't know if that question makes sense. Yeah.
Let me see if I got it. Yeah. So what I, tell me if this is what you're saying. So, you position yourself to watch the thoughts arise, but then you're generating the thought. So you're trying to like generate the thought and see the thought at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we can all generate a thought. Like when I said, okay, picture a rainbow unicorn, that was like a deliberate, I'm going to generate this thought right now. More often than not, we are not deliberately generating the thought. Those thoughts are coming unbidden on their own, like conditioned from what happened earlier today, from our childhood. You know, all the conditioning forces of our life cause these thoughts to arise. So more often than not, one of the things that happens as we practice mindfulness of thinking, where we just kind of see what arises, we start to see, wait a second, I didn't put that thought there. I don't even really feel like I generated that thought. It just kind of came out of the ether. So just to experiment with this a bit, to show you what I mean by not generating a thought and just kind of having it arise on its own, I'm going to say a few words and then just see what arises in your mind when I stop speaking or singing. Row, row, row your boat gently down the... Who else had the word stream arise in their mind? Yeah, so if you look around, a lot of hands just went up. Did you put that thought there? Did you make that happen? Or did it just kind of sprout out of the mind like a blade of grass growing out of the earth? There's something kind of impersonal about this process, right? chances are you didn't go, should I think the thought stream right now? Or I will cause the thought stream to arise in the mind. Probably just did it. So I'm kind of going on a tangent here. But what I'm wanting to point to is that it's possible to see the thoughts without generating them. That most of our thoughts are not generated, but conditioned, just coming forth. And so that actually makes the process a little more simple than having to do both at the same time.
Thank you.
Yeah. And one more, Emily.
I really liked your restaurant analogy. I think a lot of people come to meditation for lots of reasons. Sometimes they come to it because there's a behavior that they're doing and they don't understand why they do it. And so they're trying to understand why they do that behavior. And so what I'm struggling with in interpreting your analogy, which is very real, is like, well, what if your gut was telling you that like you just want to leave the retreat and you just want to eat something that's not served at the retreat anymore? And like, how do you, if you came to that conclusion, you know, through your practice, I'm not saying that you did, but like, if you did come to that conclusion, you know, how would you kind of like, trust that, I guess, yeah, as like, this is an insight that I've gained about myself. And like, maybe I've been burying this like true feeling of like, I just never wanted to go to this retreat ever. Like all I wanted to do was go to the cafe with my friends. Yeah. Like, how do you, I don't know. It's just like, I feel like meditation allows you to peel off all these layers of these things so that you can sit with it. And then if you do come to some insight, you know, what do you do with it next, I guess?
Yeah, right. So some insights, maybe I should say, the way insights function is that they reduce suffering. And there's a lot that could be said about insights. However, if I was sitting retreat and I had the conclusion, wow, I have learned about myself that retreat is not for me. Like, my purpose of life is eating cheesy fries and I need to go to this restaurant and get those cheesy fries. Like, right now, I just gotta go. Chances are I wouldn't perceive that as an insight. If there was some like aha moment with that, I'd probably, the wise thing to do would be to assess, is this skillful? You know, is this action conducive of happiness or not? So as we assess, you know, a thought arises, like fundamentally what I hear in your question, a part of your question is, when a thought arises, do we act on it or not? What do we do when what feels like an important thought arises? Sometimes, you know, we can have thoughts that feel really, really important that are, you know, my dad was diagnosed with cancer and this is like, and I haven't been spending time with him. And I just like got this hit that I really need to spend more time with him. And that might be a really important thought to listen to. But then there's other thoughts that's like, you know, this like deeply compulsive thought in the middle of meditation that like, I just have to get up and rearrange the furniture in my living room. And it's so important. You know, we can have this sense of compulsion around things that are really not very important, right? And so part of what we learn through actually seeing the thought rather than just being hijacked by it is we have that pause, what I like to call it, that sacred pause where we get to see it. And then because we've seen it, we have choice. And that choice allows us to discern, is this something I want to do or not? Where it's really obvious, a really obvious or a helpful thing to ask is, does this cause harm or not? Does this cause this thought cause harm to me or others? So, you know, if my thought is I want to go eat a half gallon of ice cream, maybe not a good idea, right? So red light, don't do that thought. If it's a thought of kindness or generosity or letting go, you know, there's, you know, some really good stuff there. Yeah, maybe do that thought. So there's a lot of different guideposts that one learns through this practice that can help one discern, oh, this is a thought that is points me more towards lasting happiness. Oh, and this one doesn't. One of those is sense pleasures. Typically, if something is just a sense pleasure, it's probably not going to lead to lasting happiness. So I'd probably abandon the cheesy fries and stay on retreat. So does that help?
Yeah, I think it's also like the question of like people are like, oh, I want to make this career. Like I was going to go down this path of like being, I'm just making this up, in venture capital, and then I'm sitting in meditation. And I'm like, no, actually, my true purpose is to, you know, go to medical school. So like when you have those kinds of thoughts, like, and you have that feeling, and you're like, oh, I never saw that before because all of these other things were kind of pointing me in this one direction, and then the layers kind of come off. I think what you're saying, though, is like you can still use that behavior of like, well, okay, now I've examined that this is a thought that's arisen from my meditation practice. Like, there's a choice that maybe comes from that, and recognizing that in isolation from everything else, and then kind of building, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. For if anybody didn't hear what I hear is the clarifying point you made is it's actually more about like if it really is a sincere insight, something that feels important to the person, that's, you know, maybe about like, wow, I've been spending my life in adventure capital, and really what's more important to me is farming, yeah, feeding people, who knows, yeah, whatever. You're exactly right. That same principle could apply where it's like, okay, this is a thought. And wow, there's a really strong emotional resonance with this. There's something that feels really settling in the body when I notice this and clarifying. There's like a clarity in the mind here. And wow, when I look at this, oh, it seems like this could really lead to greater happiness. You know, this causes less harm for me and others. It supports well-being for others and myself. I'm going to act on that. So the same principle can apply when those kind of deeper, truer insights arise. Yeah, thanks. Okay, can we pause? Go ahead. Go ahead.
Thank you, May. I just want to add a little bit to that. It's not a new question. So from my personal experience of meditation, all the moment, the tiny, slightly moment that I realized that is I don't know if I should call that aha moment or whatsoever. It doesn't come up as a thought. It actually never come up as a thought. It come up as a feeling. Like all of a sudden, I just know. It's various things. I don't know how to say that, but it's, for me, my personal experience, that moment I all of a sudden know something about me, like super, super, super deep, it doesn't show up as a thought. It's a feeling. And at that moment, I just know. And I know it's true. And that thing also revealed many other things related to me. Just want to share this, if it's helpful at all.
Thank you, Joy. So I'd like to offer you a different analogy, another analogy for working with thoughts. And this comes from Gil Fronsdal, the founder of IMC and IRC. And it's that of a riverboat. So you might imagine that you're sitting on the shore of a river. And you're watching the water flow by. And as you say, it's quite peaceful. There's not a lot happening. Think you're at ease. And as you're sitting, you notice a boat come into view. And on this boat, it looks like a war is taking place. Like people are battling and, you know, being thrown overboard, and there's cannons and guns and arrows. And as you see this, it's really pretty captivating. So there might be a temptation to run from the shore and get on the boat. Wow, this is really dramatic. I've never seen anything like it. Like, I got to get involved. This is really important. Or we can stay on the shore and we can watch that ship float past and go out of view. So that's one way you could relate to it. And so let's say you let it go by. And then you start to see another boat come into view. And on the boat, everybody's having a great time. Like, this is like celebration city. Like, there's a band playing and it's all colorful and people are in costume and it just looks amazing. Like total party boat. And there might be the temptation to run down off the shore and get on the party boat. And you could do that. You could be immersed in the party boat. Or you could stay on shore and watch the boat float past. Likewise, another boat might come, the love boat. And you could get aboard the love boat and spend some years living in the fantasy of the love boat. Or you could watch it go by. So these boats, of course, they are like our thoughts. We have all of these different thoughts arise. And it's possible, rather than needing to get on the boat and go down the river on that boat for however long, 5 minutes, 5 days, who knows, instead we can sit on the shore. You know, we can sit on the shore and peacefully watch the boat go by. And what's amazing is that over time, as we grow this ability to be mindful of thoughts, it's possible to see something really dramatic float by, to see a war boat, to see a party boat, to see a love boat, these things that normally, if we got on the boat, you know, we'd be so activated, we'd be, you know, be so big, so much, so many emotions. It's possible to just rest on the shore. And you can see a boat go by and just go, wow, look at that. Look at that. Could you believe it? This whole war boat went by this morning. Just amazing. Wow, look at that. This is a very different relationship to our thinking mind. And it's a really different vantage point to be on the shore. Rather than getting on the boat. So the suggestion in your meditation is see if you can stay on the shore. You don't have to ignore the boat that's going by. With mindfulness of thinking, we can know, oh, this is the boat that's going by. You know, it's like, you know, a thought arises, the same story arises 5 times over the course of the meditation, say. It's like, oh, wow, you know, this is a pretty persistent boat that keeps coming into view, can know it's happening, but I'm not going to get on the boat. And of course, over and over again, we will get on the boat. You know, of course we do, and that's okay. We don't have to then judge ourselves for getting on the boat. Then it's like the judgment boat goes by, right? It's so enticing to get on the boat, and we'll do it over and over. And as much as you can, develop this ability to stay on the shore, to just watch the boat go by. So we're seeing them without identifying with them. So we can see a thought without it being about me or a representation of me. It's like, wow, a war boat, a love boat. That's interesting. Check out what this mind produced today. Rather than, oh my gosh, I can't believe what I'm thinking about, and I'm such a bad person for thinking this, or wow, you know, I really, you know, something's wrong with me. Or, it's just a thought. Just a thought. No big deal. So I'd like to offer a few strategies for working with recurrent thoughts. I shared this morning a term used by Jack Kornfield, the founder of Spirit Rock up in Marin, very prolific author, and he uses the term top hits, or your top 10 hits. So these are, you know, the thoughts that are your top radio hits that keep recurring. And what you might find during, you know, different periods of your life is that there's usually a few top hits. There's a top hit that keeps returning, maybe one, maybe a few, that keep recurring. And so one of my teachers really loved professional sports. And so when he'd go sit meditation retreats, one of his top hits was, who's playing tonight? You know, basically, what's on TV? Who could I be watching? Which team is doing better? Oh my gosh, what's happening with my star player? And so one strategy for working with our top hits is to name them, to give them a little label. We've talked about over the last few weeks noting practice, you know, having a little note for a sensation, oh, tingling, heat, pressure, to note an emotion, oh, sadness, joy, resentment. We can do the same thing with thoughts. And sometimes it's really helpful just to put a little label on it. Football thought, sports thought, you know, something like that. And sometimes being able to have a little, like, put a little mindfulness frame around it with that label. It's almost like it gives us just that little bit of this slightly greater capacity to kind of catch it before we're on the boat. This is the romance thought. And sometimes that can just help us see it from the shore before getting on the boat. So just sometimes having a little label can help if you have a top hit, help you catch it before getting lost in it. And then here's another suggestion. And this is something that I found incredibly helpful, and I did mention this briefly last week. If you have a recurring thought, see if there's an underlying emotion. Check to see if there's an underlying emotion. So I was sitting a two-month retreat up at Spirit Rock 1 year, and it was just that the retreat was occurring just a little bit before my wedding. And I found that on this retreat, I had a lot of recurrent wedding thoughts. Like, oh my gosh, who's going to cater it? And, you know, what sort of food? And which dress do I choose? And oh my gosh, the invitation list. And I can't bear excluding anybody and maybe this person. And oh my gosh, this is getting really expensive. And on and on and on, right? So this came up quite a lot. And, you know, following the instruction, you know, let go of, you know, okay, I'm being with my breath. Let go of the thought. Be with the breath. Let go of the thought. But with something recurrent, you know, it can come back, like, just feels like 1,000 times something might recur. And this, the same sort of thing can happen with, you know, many, many situations for us, that there's something that's really, it's kind of got our goat. Something is persistent. So this is where it can be really helpful to check for an underlying emotion. So after this happened a lot of times, I dropped in the question, what am I feeling right now? As in, what emotion is present right now? So what is there an emotion under this? Is there an underlying emotion? And what I realized is that I was anxious. I was just anxious. And I was trying to address the anxiety. I mean, meanwhile, when I was lost in the thoughts, when I was on the wedding boat, I did not know I was on the wedding boat. I was just full force trying to figure out, you know, what food to order. But when I could come back to the shore, when I could see, oh, there's anxiety fueling this, it was a very different perspective. And what I realized when the anxiety was present, the thoughts were trying to find solutions to all these questions, so then I could stop being anxious. You know, if I can figure out the answers to all of these little mental questions, then I can relax. I'm just going to keep thinking about this until I figure it out. So without realizing it, that's what the thinking mind's doing. Once I was able to see, oh, I'm just anxious right now, then I could do mindfulness of emotions. Then I could bring my attention to the anxiety itself. I could recognize it. Oh, I can allow it to be here. Feel it in the body, the raft, right? So I can really give this emotion the attention it's asking for. And so by meeting it at the source, meeting it in the body, in the present moment, I'm giving it all the attention it's asking for. So then rather than needing to hypothetically solve the anxiety through the thinking mind, I'm kind of cutting it off at the pass. I'm meeting it in the body, in the now. And when I gave it the attention it was seeking, it stopped producing those thoughts. So this is a really powerful way to change the patterning of the thinking mind, check for an underlying emotion, and give that emotion the attention it's looking for, the attention it's seeking. Maybe it's anger. Anger produces a lot of thinking often. It can be a whole robust narrative about why we're angry and why they did it and who they are and all this stuff. Can you recognize when you're lost in that spin, oh, there's an underlying emotion. I'm angry. I'm just angry. And then do raft with the anchor, with the anger. Rather than being lost in the thoughts, recognize the anger, allow it to be present, feel it in the body, and if it's helpful, bring some tenderness to it, right? So one analogy I use for this is that of a steam train. So our thoughts are a little bit like the steam coming out through the top of the train. And we can spend a lifetime trying to, you know, blow that smoke away, trying to, you know, that let go of the thoughts. Let's just, you know, let go of this smoke. Just keep it going. But that smoke just keeps coming back, right? Just keeps coming back until we go down to the engine. If we go down to the engine and we see the coal going into the engine and what's cooking down there, and we can stop putting coal in the engine, then the smoke will stop coming out through the top of the train. Then the thoughts will simmer down. So the engine is the emotion. Sometimes that emotion functions like coal in the engine, fueling the thoughts. So if you can address the emotion, sometimes that will reduce the incessant thinking. So this is one tool you might use. Let's do another guided meditation with this. And as with last week, we'll do something a little dangerous, which is that I'll invite you to do some, to think about a situation in your life that is a little activating for you. So this is not something one would typically do when you sit down to meditate, but for us to be able to explore this theme together, it can be helpful. So I'll say a little more about that, but go ahead and find your meditation posture and can just listen from that posture. And actually, this doesn't have to be something negatively activating. This can be anything you frequently find yourself thinking about these days. So just see if you can, you know, go through the Rolodex, and you know, is there something that has been on your mind frequently? Maybe that's an upcoming chore you need to do. Maybe it's an upcoming vacation. Maybe it's a recurring complaint about somebody in your life or a work task that's been on your mind. Maybe something you want to plant in the garden. Could be anything. So anything you notice on your mind with some frequency. So it doesn't have to be the perfect thing, just choosing one. So we might call this one of your top hits, of your top radio hits. And see if you can really, you know, bring it to mind now. So maybe this. So what we're doing now is actually deliberately thinking. We're intentionally, deliberately drawing up a thought. So see if you can notice what sort of words and pictures go along with this thought package. Maybe there's images. Maybe there's memories, and those memories have words and images. Maybe there's projections about the future, so kind of fantasies that are words or images. see if you can see them. See if you can notice the work boat or the love boat or the vacation boat without getting on board, but really watching it, seeing it clearly from the shore. And as you do this, you might drop in the question, is there an underlying emotion that's present? Is there an emotion associated with this thought? And you may find, oh, no, right now there's really nothing. I'm not really seeing anything. And if so, that's fine. Maybe there's just a little calm that's present or indifference. And whatever you find, just recognizing that emotion or that mood, that attitude that's relating to it, allowing it to be there. And feeling it in the body. So what's it feel like in the body when you think this thought? Maybe there are pleasant sensations in the body. Maybe there are unpleasant sensations. Where do you feel the sensations most strongly when you think this thought? Maybe in the jaw, or somewhere in the torso or the neck. Maybe noticing other aspects of the thought. Maybe new words or pictures. Just being present for them. Watching from the riverbank. And if there's any suffering associated with this thought or the emotion that comes forth from this thought, bringing a little tenderness. Maybe that's a hand on the heart if that feels helpful. Maybe saying something soothing. It's okay, love. It's okay. There, there. May you be held in compassion. May you be at ease. And we'll close with something really simple, just coming back to the breath. Thank you. When you are meditating at home, I don't typically suggest that you deliberately bring a situation to mind. My general advice is don't go looking for trouble. So the trouble will come and find you soon enough. So I typically recommend you start with the breath. You know, just be with a simple object. And then if the trouble comes to find you, then, you know, turn and look for it. If, you know, if some dominant thought comes and is, you know, really asserting itself, or a strong emotion comes through, then of course let go of the breath and see what's happening there. This is, you know, your learning tools for being able to see what's happening in the mind. If a repeating thought keeps coming up, what's going on here? Let's see what's happening here, and how to be with that thought in a wise way. Or a strong emotion comes up. What's going on here? Oh, I'm going to give this emotion the attention it's asking for. I'm going to let go of the breath, turn and be with the emotion. So are there any questions? Any questions or reflections on that last meditation? Or on these teachings as a whole? Of course. So
I get the wedding thing.
Oh, here.
The wedding anxiety thing. So let's say you decide you're anxious because you have all these things that you're planning, and you've decided, okay, the thing that I'm feeling is anxiety. So is the healthy thing to then, like, you've acknowledged it, you've said, okay, it's really normal to feel anxious about a wedding. But then, like, what do you do about it, right? So, like, in my anxious mind, for me, what would make me feel better is, like, after I finish meditating, would be to go and book the wedding planner or, like, whatever, the caterer. Mm-hmm. So, like, what's the helpful response? Like, once you recognized, okay, I'm anxious about the laundry machine, but I can't fix my laundry machine. I'm a renter. Like, what do you, like, what's the next response after you felt and feel like it's a normal thing to feel?
Mm-hmm. Right. So the suggestions I'm offering are specifically how to respond internally. Right. What's the internal response versus the external response? And I'll speak to both. So you realize, gosh, I'm anxious, or gosh, I'm, you know, I'm angry, or I'm resentful, or I'm envious, or whatever it is. Rather than just jumping to the external action, okay, I've recognized that. I'm just going to give it some time. I'm going to allow that to be here. I'm going to feel it in the body, bring some tenderness to it if that's helpful. So that's what you do in the meditation, right? Outside of the meditation, skillful action is often what's needed. Angelus Arian says, action absorbs anxiety. So often taking an action is really useful. So it probably would have been unskillful just for me to, you know, finish my retreat and go, oh, I'm just going to accept that anxiety is here and we'll just see what happens on the wedding day. Right? So it's totally appropriate and useful to book the wedding planner or to, you know, sit down with a paper and pen and deliberately think through, okay, what food do I want to order? So that's, you know, I'm choosing to deliberately think something through right now. And that's really useful, really helpful with the thinking mind, to deliberately sit down and think. What's nice about that is then we're not, then the movie isn't playing while we're trying to do everything else. You know, it's not playing while we're doing the dishes and driving the car, and it takes some time to deliberately sit down and think something through and take some actions around it. So that's very much, even though this class is really about meditation, the Buddhist path has myriad teachings on living a wise life, not just how to meditate, but what do you actually do when you stand up from meditation? What actions do you take and what actions do you not take? What actions lead towards happiness, which ones don't? So that's a much bigger study, but one that's really, really beneficial. It yields a lot of fruit to do that study. Yeah. Any other questions? Or reflections? All right, well, I'll share what the homework is, and if we still have time, and there's a question that arises, you can let me know. So the homework is to continue your meditation practice. And I would continue to do what we've been cultivating this whole time, breath as the primary anchor, breath as that home base, and including sensations as they become predominant, including sounds, including emotions. And now you have the tools for including thoughts. Something that I want to emphasize is that often we don't have the stability of mind in our daily practice to see thoughts very clearly without being caught in them. Often there's just so much distraction in the mind that if we turn to look at a thought, it's like we're down the rabbit hole before we have a chance to really even see what's there. It's like, oh, I see you. Like we're just gone, right? We're on that boat before we even know it. So that's okay. If that's what happens, that's fine. And what may be helpful if that's happening a lot is just keep the practice simple. Just stick with the breath, the body, and let go of thoughts. Let go of them rather than trying to see them, you know, really taking a look at them. It works best to look, to you know, really take a look at the thoughts when the mind is more quiet and stable. So let's say you've been sitting for a while. Maybe you've learned how to have longer meditation periods. Maybe you're sitting for half an hour or something like that, and you spend the first 20 minutes just you know, focusing on the breath, letting go of thoughts, and you're noticing, wow, you know, the mind is starting to feel I'm more settled. I'm not getting lost every second. I really feel like I'm more here. And a thought goes by, rather than letting go of the thought, that's a good time to turn. What's going on here? Let's take a look at this, right? So the more stability that's in the mind, the more settled you are, the easier it'll be to see a thought. That said, if you're noticing a repeat hit, like a number one hit that comes up again and again, even if you're not very settled, it can be helpful to try to see what's going on there. See if you can take a look at it. Because when things have that sort of gravitational force and they keep recurring, sometimes there's enough emotion or body sensation to keep us present with it. So you can experiment, see what works for you. Any questions about that? Yeah.
So as we're noting our thoughts and feeling any underlying emotions, what are some good cues we can use to keep ourselves from going off into then having thoughts about those thoughts?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Or shooting those extra arrows or, yeah, and getting
engaged. Overthinking about the thought, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. So this is the most common thing that will happen is we see a thought for a moment, and then before we know it, we're thinking about the thought. We're kind of down the rabbit hole again. So it takes time. It takes training to be able to be with it. And what will help is that stability, is the really developing that relationship with the breath and the body. These comparatively, you know, a thought is a very subtle object. The breath and the body are not as subtle. There, you know, there's some substance, there's some matter here, right? So developing a greater capacity to be with these more dominant objects will help settle and stabilize and allow you to see the thought more clearly without falling into commentary about the thought, judging the thought, you know, getting on the boat. So I might also say small moments many times. So, you know, look, check it out, come back to the breath and the body, little by little. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah. And then the second part of the homework is just see if you notice your top three hits for the week. What are your 1, 2, and 3? It's okay if you don't want to number them in that order, but what are the main hits that are percolating to the top that you notice, like, oh, it's this one again while I'm doing the dishes, or oh, I'm driving and I'm thinking about that thing again. So just see if you can notice. This can increase your awareness of what's important to you right now. And then you can, when you've identified them, you can do this practice. You can practice mindfulness of thinking, see if there's an underlying emotion, see what the thought feels like in the body, etc. We have time for one question, if there's a remaining one. Yeah, Daniel, go ahead.
Is 20 to 30 minutes be split into two sessions, or is it better to have one?
Can the meditation period be split into two sessions, like one in the morning, one in the afternoon, or?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. For some people, it's actually really helpful to try, have little bookends during the day, you know, one in the morning, one in the evening. Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. Well, thank you all for coming today. As always, if you'd like to make a donation, there's the iPad in the corner and the box by the front door. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah.